You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Climate change reparations are set to take centre stage at this year's COP27 summit. They'll see developing countries being paid for climate change damages, especially when these countries have contributed the least to climate change. So how exactly will this work? I asked Dr. Kevin Trenberth, a distinguished scholar at the National Centre of Atmospheric Research in Colorado.
Well, that's a really good question because it means assigning blame, and that's very difficult because the main problem with climate change arises from the changing composition of the atmosphere, which is primarily due to burning fossil fuels, putting more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, but also other greenhouse gases, including, especially from New Zealand's standpoint, methane, and so these become globally distributed. So it means that although one small country may only contribute a little bit, every country can sort of argue that we've only contributed a little bit. And even the U.S. is the biggest contributor overall, but the U.S. can argue that, well, if it weren't for all the other contributions, there wouldn't be a problem. And I think that's probably true as well. And so assigning blame and how you portion it out is a major contentious issue, and I don't think it's going to be solvable at COP27.
I find this really interesting because if it is a very scientific thing to kind of measure emissions from a country, for example, the US, what grounds do they have to kind of claim that they're only contributing a little bit?
Since the early 2000, what year are we in? Since the early 2000s, China has been by far the biggest emitter of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. And, you know, China has a huge population. I mean, the government there is understandably trying to upgrade the standard of living of all of their people, and that's a very desirable thing to do. But they've done it mainly by burning coal through coal-fired power stations and so on, rather than through renewable energy. And if it weren't for China doing what it's doing right now, and also India's coming up closely in behind, then we would have much less of a problem than we have right now. So, I don't think, certainly the U.S. is not shying away from the fact that they've been the biggest contributor, and Europe historically has been a major contributor as well, but I don't think you will find that they will accept blame, and instead that they will provide various kinds of contributions, perhaps to this thing called the Green Fund that was established under the Paris Agreement in 2015. The reparations, the lost and damage aspect of things, goes a little bit beyond that. But, you know, there are other aspects of that as well, because a lot of that relates to there wouldn't be a problem if people didn't put themselves in harm's way, if people didn't build in coastal regions where they shouldn't have built in the first place, or if they didn't build in floodplains, which has happened in too many places around the world. And that was certainly the case in Pakistan recently, for instance, where there was, you know, major flooding, and yet the population growth in Pakistan has been enormous.
Right.
And so population and the use of resources is an underlying issue as well. And so that relates to, you know, the sustainability of basically everything that we do on the planet. And, you know, one can argue that there's already too many people on the planet, and yet we're right at, 8 billion people on the planet, and we're putting another billion people on the planet about every 20 years or so. And that is not sustainable.
Yeah, I'm quite interested in this argument that people are putting themselves in harm's way by building in these low-lying and coastal areas. But surely the response to that is that people build there because they don't have an option, given the amount of people on the planet at the moment, and also the kind of damages that may be expected are kind of beyond what was projected because of human-made climate change.
Yeah, that's certainly true. climate change has crept up on a lot of people, and so the problem is perhaps a bit worse than many people thought. But, you know, I don't know about you, but when, you know, I bought a place in Auckland area, 3 years ago, and the first thing I do is look at the drainage systems. You know, where will water flow? Where will water come from? What are the risks related to that? And that's the sort of thing that anybody certainly ought to do.
I guess the question is, if people are more educated in this area, they would probably look for these kind of factors when they're considering where to live. But what about people who genuinely don't have that option or don't have their education either?
Let me just backtrack a little, because in the US it's kind of interesting to see the role of insurance. And so people have houses. For instance, in Florida, where they just got hit by this major hurricane called Ian. Mm. And as a result, the insurance rates are going to go up. And so if you start paying $30,000 a year for your insurance, then, you know, maybe you can't afford to buy there and or can't afford to live there anymore. And so insurance, in that case, plays a major role. And in developing countries, you know, maybe insurance doesn't come into play, but people are taking a risk. They're building in a place where that they ought to be aware that they're subject to potential flooding because they're on a floodplain. In the case of Pakistan and the Indus River floodplain, and you know, maybe they don't have very many options. But you know, that's a problem in its own right.
Bringing this back to climate reparations at the COP27 summit this week, will there be this kind of appetite for it, given these examples that you've put forward, that people would potentially be looking to shift the blame elsewhere for climate-related damages and disasters? Do you think it's a likely outcome?
It's obviously a really tricky question, and I don't think you'll find that the developed countries will be admitting liability in any real sense, but they will try and take some responsibility and set up funds to help ameliorate the problem, in particular by trying to encourage better developments and more resilient developments, and in particular drainage systems and building codes can be much improved in many places in order to cut down on the kinds of damage and losses that are surely going to happen again when the next storm comes along. And so I think that will be the main approach that happens out of all of this. How well these funds become funded, given all of the pressures from the war in the Ukraine and the shortages of fuel in Europe and so on, this, you know, at the moment, I don't think there's a strong appetite for putting a lot of funds out there that might be used in this fashion. So it'll be interesting to see exactly how the politics plays out at COP27 on this regard.
That was Dr. Kevin Trenberth, a distinguished scholar at the National Centre of Atmospheric Research in Colorado, speaking to me about climate change reparations and whether it's the way to go ahead of this year's COP27 summit.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.